Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhi Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
What exactly is Uttama Bhakti? Pure Bhakti is to perform devotional service with body, mind, and words, with a sustained, favorable, loving attitude, and the unreserved desire to please Krishna. Right? So now he's put some nice points in here. Is that serving body, mind, and words? That means there's complete service, complete absorption. And then he mentions here sustained, that it's always consistent, because otherwise then if someone's nice to you sometimes and sometimes not nice to you, then you're not quite sure. But if they're always consistent in the relationship, that's better. All right? And favorable, that it must be favorable to Krishna. Right? Because otherwise you may be conscious of Krishna, but it's not necessarily favorable. Because you can be conscious of God, but not be favorable towards Him. Right? Most atheists are very God conscious. They're just not favorable. Right? Like that. Probably an atheist thinks about God more than just the common person. Right? But it's, yeah. Right? And then loving attitude. So that favorable and is done with affection. So it's not just favorable to Krishna. Okay, it's good for Krishna and all that, but it's actually done out of affection that it's good for Krishna. Right? An unreserved desire to please Krishna. Right? So the whole idea is to just please Krishna. So that means it'll be free from karma and jnana. Right? Because if there's reserved desire, it means then it's something for you, something for Krishna. But unreserved means it's just totally for Krishna. This is the Sarup Lakshana of pure bhakti, right? Because there may be so many aspects of devotional service that will be explained, you know, that the benefits of it and all kinds of qualities. But this is the actual essential point. If this one's there, then you know that that is a symptom of pure bhakti. Other things are then side things that you'll also notice along with it. Right? We'll get into those. I think that's coming up. You know, being freed from material difficulties and, you know, peacefulness, all these other things like that. Knowledge, renunciation, all these different things will come. But those are not the main lakshanas, the main, identifying marks. It's that it's being done in pure devotion. Right? That means being done favorably to Krishna without a desire for karma and jnana. The jiva is endowed with individual capabilities and desires. When the mercy of Sri Krishna and the blessings of the pure devotee reinforce the jiva's own capabilities in executing bhakti, then the internal energy of the Supreme Lord, the Srup Shakti, embellishes the jiva with bhava, transcendental sentiments. So, that everybody has individual nature. So that's not a problem. Right? That's the actual point of the jivas, is that you're having these unlimited, more adding of slightly different flavors. You know? Does that make sense? It means like you're doing a preparation. There's the main elements to that cooking. You have the main items and all that. That's what makes it what it is. Right? You say it's a cauliflower sabji. Why? Because it has cauliflower in it, right? You know, so you have all these main ingredients, but then you have like subtle little spices and little different things and garnishings and all that that just add to it. It means it'll be a nice sabji without it, but by adding that, it just even makes it more nice. Does that make sense? So that's what all these unlimited jivas, they add all these little bit of spice to what's already going on. It means whatever's going on is already perfect. It just adds more flavors. Yes.
But we're still the same.
We're still the same means?
Jivas.
We're still the same jivas.
I mean,
I don't get the connection.
Well, the thing, this unlimited varieties of flavors, right?
Right.
But it's the same jivatma that's in all bodies.
Means in all these flavors.
Yeah, I'm trying to distinguish between conditioning and personality here. I mean,
conditioning and personality. The point is that jiva has a natural personality. It's just covered by whichever one you particularly have now.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You know what I'm saying? That's why it's talking about engaging in favorable devotional service free from karma and jnana. Because that applies to anyone, no matter what the conditioning. So that's the real attitude of the jiva. Then, accordingly, everybody has their particular unique nature. That's a secondary consideration. Does that make sense?
And at this point, maybe even not even...
No, but the principle is the same, is that that's what you're doing, so whatever the uniqueness of the individual conditioning, it doesn't matter. Then it fits in nicely.
Mm.
Because it's being used properly.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Like that if something's used properly in Krishna's service, it doesn't create a conflict.
Mm.
Something not used properly creates a conflict.
Yes.
Right? So that's why the various rules and everything are there, so that a certain qualities, certain conditioning, they apply in a certain place.
Mm.
You know, it means it's just like this. Mother just showed at home, telling everybody to get this and get that and cook this and make sure it's hot and serve it nicely and don't spill it. It works out great, right? So the gopis are there, they're cooking, they're serving Krishna. They're doing all these nice things, and Mother Yashoda's overwatching it. Now, can you imagine her down at the Rasa dance? You know, like that. It's midnight, it's cold out. You're dancing on the this cold sand, and you're all doing it in bare feet. You know, wear the socks, you know. I mean, is this going to work? You know? Yeah, so that's why she doesn't go out to these things, because it won't match. It doesn't even match. Okay, when the cowherd boys are in the city, right? Then it works, right? Telling, seeing that they're doing the things, getting up on time, dressing nicely, doing everything. Like that, it works. But now when they go out and play and wrestle, then is it, so Mother just showed us out there, it'll work? Oh, don't wrestle so hard, or what are you doing that, or why don't we play this game, or, you know, is it going to work? No. So that's why she doesn't go out. Right? So that's why these rules are there, is because it's not that she can't go out into the forest and she wouldn't be able to play a game. The problem is the mentality doesn't match. See, that's what's missed in the modern society, is we think, well, I can actually do that, but do you have the mentality for it? That's the problem, because it all goes together. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that you have a combination of skills, but then there's the attitude that goes with the skills.
Mm-hmm.
So the modern concept, if I can do the skills, I'm qualified to do it, and it's my right. But the point is the mentality is not considered, because the mentality is not considered, then therefore mentalities aren't considered at all. So then in personal life, mentalities aren't considered, and it doesn't work out. Right? But if you consider in the area of skills who does what because of mentality, then in relationships it will work out. The point is the jiva's illusion is he can have his cake and eat it. I can do whatever I want whimsically, and it will all work out perfectly. No, only if you follow the rules will it work out. Right? If I'm following a recipe and it says, you know, put this in there, that in the bowl, and I decide, hey, why don't I put the chair inside here? You know, and, you know, like this, you know. It says here, whip it. No, I don't want to whip it. You know, I want to, you know, stir it. You know, or how you say it? Yeah, I said, you know, shake it. Yes. Not stir it, right? You know, like that. So, you know, is it going to work? No, that's the whole point, is there's a reason, because you get a different result. But the thing is we say, no, I'll do whatever I want and I'll get whatever result I want. That's for children. Okay, it doesn't matter that they're 40, 50, 60 years old. They're still children when it comes to actually understanding the laws of nature. It's still whimsical. Because that's the whole thing. So the jivas, they add to this. And so then They're there because that's also their natures. They're adding something. They aren't the meal.
Yeah.
Right? They're adding to something already going on there. It doesn't mean Krishna won't directly interact with them, mm-hmm. but they'll interact with them in that context of that bigger mm-hmm. situation. Okay. Hare Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So now that individual nature then works out very nicely. So whatever it is, it doesn't matter. If this attitude is here, then they become whatever?
That's okay.
Yeah.
Just telling my friend I have to take photos.
Oh, okay, yeah. He says, if I don't know you're taking photos, it's all right. If I know you're taking photos, you can't take photos. that's how it works. Like that. I say. Yes.
It said that with the mercy of Sri Krishna and the essence of pure devotees, then it can reinforce the jiva's own capability.
Yes.
What about jiva's own capability?
What does that mean? Jiva's own capability without those, but then means he has capacity to do something, but what's the meaning if it's not reinforced with that bhakti? Right? Because the jiva, being who he is, it has to be under one potency or the other, either internal or external. So, if he's reinforced with the Maya Shakti, right, then, you know, his personality comes out and everything like that, and he can do so many things. But it's not what you want. It's not working out. So one wants to be reinforced with the internal potency. So when Krishna and the Vaishnavas give their blessing, then the internal potency then brings one up to that platform. One gets that taste. The one brings one to the platform of ecstasy. Like that. Does that make sense? So then one's able to appreciate. You know what I'm saying? If you're having a mixed group and you're having, you know, just a casual time, right? Talking and this and eating and laughing. Who controls the mood? The men or the women? The women. So that's the whole point. So bhava is that mood, appreciating that mood, that ecstasy that comes from it. That's controlled by the internal potency. So if Krishna and the Vaishnavas give their blessing, then she does that, right? Because the Vaishnavas are assisting her and she's serving Krishna, right? So if Krishna is favorable and the Vaishnavas are favorable, then the internal potency, then you get all that. You understand? Means we're talking about Krishna getting liberated, this, that. But the point is liberated is not the big deal. It's the taste of devotional service that's the big deal. Does that make sense? So that's also the element of that this won't come out so much in other lines. Because Vaishnavas means servant of Vishnu. Right? Karshna means servant of Krishna. Right? Gaudiya means servant of Radharani. Does that make sense?
For us, internal potency would be Shiva.
Yes.
So it means that she's not impartial if she can be also merciful on her own.
She can, but the point is she's merciful on her own. Still, you have to get by, in other words, by getting her grace, then you get Krishna's grace. And once you get Krishna's grace, then you can taste the devotional service. You know, it's just like having faith, you take up the association of devotees, but to get faith, you had to have had the association of devotees. So it goes both ways. You have those two aspects. So you're getting the mercy of the internal potency, but at the same time, after getting Krishna's mercy, then you're going to get that further than that taste in that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it works. But it's just bringing out this particular aspect of how that part of that works. Yeah.
Maharaj, in the Mahabharata, was this about the mood, my point. Comes this, when the Pandavas was in this mat showing their prowess about when they came from the Kurukula for Kshatriyas, and
right,
then
right.
The Karna suddenly appears there, so it's mm-hmm. totally break the whole mood, although about...
Yeah, it means on a normal consideration, then Kshatriyas are doing something and, you know, showing their prowess and everyone's impressed by someone else coming in and saying, oh, that's nothing, I can do all that. It adds to the flavor. But here, it wasn't about kshatriyas. There, it was about teacher and student, and about the kings, you know, the kshatriyas leading the people, and the people having that faith. You know, it was like, here, Drona has shown them, so they're showing off their prowess. So one, they're great students, and it also shows he's a good teacher, right? And then by them being so good, then the people will have faith in the kings, that the kings are doing things nicely. Now it will continue because the next generation is so nicely trained. And not only that, you have such a good Brahmin who is giving direction and all that. So from all sides, the main point was to get that faith of the people. Because that's the whole idea. Kshatriyas are to protect. So you have to have faith to do that. So Karna walking in and then doing his whole Kshatriya chivalry there, it's unnecessary. Because then it's a matter of who should be in charge. The common person becomes disturbed. So because of not understanding the mood, that's why then the Pandavas aren't accepting him. And they're looking at the Sutta element rather than the Kshatriya. Means they're not doubting that he's not a Kshatriya by occupation, because on the battlefield they don't refuse to fight with him if they considered him not on the proper attitude. I mean, the proper ability, or that they wouldn't, they would say, we can't fight with him. He's actually a Sutta. But their point is, it's not that he's a Sutta by occupation, he's a Sutta by his mood, in that he's not seeing these subtleties that are there. Because the chariot driver just does what he's told, right? Like that. So he doesn't have to worry what would be the right place to be. He's told where to go. Like that. But that's the problem. He needs to be told, this is not your place. Right? And so then, but Duryodhana, seeing the political benefit, he takes advantage of that. And so then he installs him as king, this and that. They're not complaining that he's made a king. They're just complaining his attitude isn't any good.
But his attitude didn't improve in the process all the way at the end of the, when he died. It didn't.
I mean, it's the very end. I mean, okay, you can count that. So that last, you know, 2 minutes, you know, so it's, you know, so it's a, you know, better than. But the point is that it's the wrong attitude for the place. So that's what we mentioned before. Is attitude has a lot to do with it. So when you take time, place, and circumstance, the circumstance is what judges the attitude. Right? Does that make sense? Time and place is certain skills, but then circumstance is the attitude. You have to have that. You know? So the thing is, the skills and the attitude go together. He has the skills, but a wrong attitude.
Right? Attitude is more,
because he didn't grow up with Kshatriyas, but he's inherently a Kshatriya. So that fine point of interaction he doesn't have. You know what I'm saying? If he had grown up with them, he'd have that kind of thing and understand. He would stand on the side, and then at another time he would come to Drona and say something. Like that. Does that make sense?
Important of the guru.
Yeah, because the point is it's, if it is prowess, he walks in and goes, I'm the student of Parasaram. And so I say that my teacher is great, so I can do whatever Drona has taught. You know, that kind of a thing. But to come in and just ignore Drona and Kripa and everything, that's not proper. Is that okay? So this bhava enhances the ripening of the Sarup Lakshana, right? Because the ripening means prema. So bhava will enhance that, right? So already the preliminaries of that are, we can see as bhava is the main thing, but at the same time preliminaries of that are ruchi and asakti. Mm-hmm. So already when one gets the blessings of the Vaishnavas and Krishna, then that taste for devotional service comes, right? So then that then very quickly matures into bhava, which then matures into prema. The mind, words, and body of the conditioned jiva are mundane. So when the jiva endeavors to apply them with his own power and level of consciousness, this only results in materialistic knowledge and dry false renunciation. Because right? If you're using your conditioning, that's all you're going to get. Because right? You don't know anything else. Because bhakti comes from bhakti. So you can't get bhakti from one's own conditioning. The symptoms of Shuddha Bhakti are not evoked by such efforts, right? So it's not based on what your qualifications are and your skills. That's one of the symptoms, you know, of the lakshanas of a neophyte. He thinks my material skills, that's the symptom of my advancement, right? You know, the person's the manager, they come in, you know, and after a few months they manage and organize a big festival, so that's why he's advanced. No, that means he nicely engaged his skill. But the point is that's what he can do. He could also organize, you know, some rock festival. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not a symptom of advancement. What the Krishna conscious, that he's engaging that ability in Krishna's service. That's what's special. Now, when it comes to organizing festivals, you'd go to him. But when it comes to understanding the philosophy or other things, he's not necessarily the one to say. Right. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Right there. So that's the difficulty. We think that my particular conditioning, because I have a better quality of conditioning for a particular situation, therefore I'm more advanced. No, advancement is pure devotion, that you're doing it for Krishna without karma again. Now, if that person happens to do it in pure devotion, then that's advancement. But it's not because of the skill, it's because of the pure devotion. Yes.
But we also see sometimes that people, when they get bhakti, they suddenly are able to do things they couldn't do before.
That's there. But then that's a side symptom of devotional service. The other one is devotional service includes everything. But the conditioning material doesn't include devotional service. It goes one way. Yeah, because the original has everything that's in the reflection and more. Right? You know, because the reflection only shows so much. Right? Like that. You actually have a back of your head, like that. But in the reflection, there's no back of your head. You know, I mean, if you turn around so there, it's reflected, you can't see it. So you know like that. So. However, the symptoms of Shuddha Bhakti are not evoked by such efforts. Right, it means the material conditioning. However, when the Sarup Shakti of the Supreme Lord descends and infuses the jiva with bhava, even slightly, then the symptoms of unalloyed Shuddha Bhakti begin to manifest. Right, so it's only being empowered by the internal potency. That's the only way bhakti comes. Sri Krishna is the paramount divinity. Hence, the purest form of bhakti is devotion to Sri Krishna. Worship of Brahman, so that's why the purest form of bhakti means there's bhakti, so there's Shuddha bhakti, and then there's pure unalloyed bhakti, so that will be towards Krishna. Worship of Brahman and worship of Paramatma constitute the path of jnana and karma, not bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? Because Paramatma means you're worried about what activity I do, and Brahman, it's about knowledge. Like that. So even though, so here it's in general just saying the bhakti, you may have devotion towards, but they're not really bhakti. Right? So then it's Krishna who is the object of bhakti.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Endeavor can be of two kinds, anukulya, favorable, and pratikulya, unfavorable. Only favorable endeavors are included within the parameters of actual bhakti. Because right? Otherwise, then if it's correct by karma or jnana, it may be purifying. Does that make sense? But it's not itself devotion. The word anukulya alludes to the lofty and exhilarating feelings one develops for Sri Krishna in all the activities of bhakti. At the stage of sadhana bhakti, these feelings are slightly tinged with mundane desire. Right, so that point is that slight tinge is what we're trying to get rid of. So it's not a matter of gross. Within the realm of slightly tinged, we'll say this is more slightly tinged, this is less slightly tinged. So then within that, then we will complain. But there's no question that there's any comparison between that and the materialist. Right, the materialist, now that is not tinged. That's just material. Right?
In this case, the sadhana bhakti would be bhava bhakti. Bhakti.
No. Bhava, this would just bhava. Be sadhana, not necessarily. I mean, it would include, it means here in this description, they're counting sadhana, meaning from shraddha through bhava. Right? And then prema, So those eight stages, those are counted as sadhana. But there's two kinds of sadhana, right? There's the sadhana in conditioning, and then there's the sadhana in liberation. But prema, that's considered the other category. So one has to be careful is that the mundane desire there, on the lower level, then that we're more aware of, right? But on the level of bhava, then there's the aspect of I'm advanced, or I'm a guru of devotees. So those are symptoms that, if those are there, because that's what it's meant by there's that fragrance that's left. It's like, it means you're conditioning by reaction is all gone, but that still little bit of flavor left from the mentality is still there. So that has to be gotten rid of in the practice of bhava sadhana. So on the one, it's actual desire and everything, and endeavors and all these things, you know, gross or subtle, right? But with the bhava, then it's just that underlying, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, right? Does that make sense? So that comes out as you know, I'm the controller, I'm advanced, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the guru of devotees. So it's what's left. So that has to go. So when that goes, then the bhava moves very quickly, and then it comes to prema. So that little bit that is there. So you can talk in general like that, but we have to also then, because this is giving just the general between sadhana and prema, and that sadhana matures into prema by getting the blessings of Guru Krishna and the Vaishnavas. Right? And then the internal potency imbues one with that bhakti shakti, and then it works nicely. Then it naturally moves very quickly and turns into prema. Right? So it's not getting to the detail, the difference here. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. Okay, at the stage of sadhana bhakti, these feelings are slightly tinged with mundane desire, but at the perfected stage of prema bhakti, the feelings are cleansed of all material contamination. In both stages, the symptoms of the bhakti are the same. Hence, favorable devotional service to Sri Krishna is the Srup Lakshana of bhakti. Right? So it's meaning that point of its being favorable to Krishna, right, without karma or jnana, that's the symptom. All the way through, right? From the madhyam to the uttam to the platform of prema. All this is the same all the way through, right? So that's the thing. But you may see different secondary symptoms in the madhyam adhikari, in the bhava bhakta, and in the prema bhakta. Does that make sense? So this one is all the way through. This you can always see. The understanding of the Sarup Lakshana of Bhakti is, however, not complete without describing the Tatastha Lakshana of Bhakti. Right? Tatastha means sometimes you see it, sometimes you don't. Right? Just like in the platform of Bhava, which we'll get into later. So then the Stai Bhava means what is the fixed relationship with Krishna. That will always be there. But now what particular ecstasy, whatever manifestation of the ecstasy, or these side ecstasies, that will change from moment to moment. But one is always fixed. So the Sarup Lakshana is always there. The other Lakshana is sometimes you see them, sometimes not. You know, just like humility is one of the qualities of the devotee, of bhakti. But it's not something you regularly see, let's say, in Bhima. But you always see that devotion to Krishna. So the Sarup Lakshana is always there. But other ones you may appreciate, may not. Yudhishthira is always humble. But Bhima, you know, the fun part of Bhima is he's not. Right? You know, so he's got that. Now, Karna also is not. But it's not so nice. Because it's not a manifestation or not of a tatastha lakshana of pure devotion. So Bhima has, so no matter what he does, it's always nice. Karna only when he's being, you know, nice and properly behaved, then he's nice. We can appreciate it. When he's giving in charity and doing these things or having, you know, intimate talks with Krishna, things like that, then you can appreciate him a bit more. But any other times, not, because it's just mundane. Does that make sense? So that's why when you're looking at a devotee, you have to look at that one. not something else. Oh, he's not humble, so he's not a devotee. But no one said humility is the main lakshana. Right?
Right. The main lakshana would be the devotion.
It means that devotion, favorable, consistent, favorable devotion to Krishna, right? Without any other kind of desire, right? That's what you're looking for. Right? So, pure devotion is when that's prominent. But the point is it still can get better. Therefore, bhava, and that can still get better. Therefore, it's prema. So it's a matter of maturing, right? Does that make sense? So if we look at it, no, unless it's 100%. But the point is if we don't have pure devotion, how do we know what it is? Right? So it's like that. Srila Rupa Goswami distinguishes two items of tatastha lakshana, anyavilashita shunyam, freedom from the desire for non-devotional activities, and jnana karmadya navritam, being unshackled from the bindings of jnana and karma. The aspiration to advance in Shuddha Bhakti should be the sole desire in the heart. Any other desires are in forbidding conflict with it. Any other desires are in forbidding conflict with the principles of pure bhakti. I mean, it makes sense if any other forbidden desires are in conflict with the principles of pure bhakti, but I'm not exactly sure what's the... Okay. If the attachment for jnana, karma, yoga, tyaga, etc. increases, the heart and consciousness are progressively covered, and pure devotional fervor is driven away. Therefore, these two impediments, karma and jnana, must be strictly avoided in the practice of bhakti. Only then can devotional service to Sri Krishna be executed favorably. This is Shuddha Bhakti, right? So it may be favorable to Krishna, but it has to still be watching out for these things, right? Because the main thing is that devotion to Krishna, that consistent, favorable devotion. That's the main point. But at the same time as these ones of not being distracted by karma and jnana. So in other words, not being interested in non-devotional activities. Or other, yeah, where is it? How do you put them? Okay. Freedom from desire for non-devotional activities. Oh, okay. And freedom from karma and jnana. Okay. Vijay. What are the specific characteristics of bhakti by which a seeker may recognize Shuddha Bhakti? Raghunath Das Babaji. Srila Rupa Goswami has enumerated six specific symptoms of Shuddha Bhakti in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Purva 112. Shuddha Bhakti extirpates kleshagni, distress, shubhata, offers good fortune, moksha lagu takrit, exposes the inanity of liberation. Sudurlabha makes herself very rarely obtainable. Sandrananda Visheshatma fills the heart with an inexplicable joy. And Sri Krishna Karshini attracts Sri Krishna. Klesha, distress, is of three types. Papa, sin. Papa Bijam, seeds of sin. And Avidya, nescience. Papa has three categories. Pataka, sinful. Mahapataka, very sinful. And Atipataka, extremely sinful. When Shuddha Bhakti dawns in the heart, one naturally avoids all of these degrees of sinful activity. The Papa Bijam within the heart, prompt one to sin. However, such harmful propensities are expelled from the heart, pulsating with the feelings of Shuddha Bhakti. Right? In other words, if one is not interested in material activities, that means one will stop sin. But it also means that's the sin, just what you're doing. But the Papa Bija means those desires that come up. Means they may be ones that you're aware of, maybe ones you're not aware of. But because of your absorption in devotional service, they're not interesting. So that's what it mentions. Devotional service, like if you take the seeds and just leave them in water, they can't sprout. If you put them in water for a short time and take them out, they'll sprout. But if you just leave them there, they won't sprout, right? Or if you're in the fire devotional service, you roast them in a pan, they won't sprout. Either way, they're not going to sprout, however you look at it. So the point is then they just don't come up. So that absorption is there. Right? The state when the jiva has forgotten his sarup is known as avidya. The first stirrings of Shuddha Bhakti enlighten the jiva with the realization that the jiva is an eternal servant of Krishna and thus evaporates Sarup Brahma. Right? This is different than Brahma when the H is in the other place. That's Brahma. That means that's translated Lord Brahma, or it means Vishnu, or it means Brahman. Like this. But when the H is with the B, Brahma, that means illusion. Right? So Sarup Brahma means I think I'm the body. So the first step is, I think I'm servant of Krishna. So when we say the sarup is revealed, it means the sarup is, I am servant of Krishna. That's the primary point. Secondary is, it's the specific nature of that sarup. Does that make sense? So it doesn't matter. Is whatever the specific sarup is in the spiritual world, you're going to perform your devotional service based on that. Right? Does that make sense? So just like... it's the ego that defines what you're going to do, right? So how you identify with the ego here defines what you'll do. So how you define there as servant of Krishna, that's what you'll do. Does that make sense? So like we said, Mother Yashoda is Krishna's mom. So therefore, that's the identity. So she'll do those activities. So those things favorable to being in the parental rasa, she'll do. Those things not favorable, she won't do. But the principle of always doing something to please Krishna, she's servant of Krishna, that's always there. And that's common with everybody. Yes?
What's the meaning of this term, Sarup Brahma?
Sarup Brahma. Sarup Brahma. Sarup means form. And Brahma means illusion. Right? So, in other words, you have a Brahma or illusion about your sarup, your form. Right? So generally we like to immediately go to, okay, well that means my spiritual form is revealed. Yes, the spiritual form meaning servant of Krishna is revealed. Other, that will be revealed later. If you don't get this first one, the details are not going to come. Right? Does that make sense?
So that's the ego?
Yes, that'll be the false ego. So when you turn it into I'm servant of Krishna, then it turns into real ego. Does that make sense?
This first stirrings of Shuddha Bhakti enlighten the jiva with the realization that jiva is an eternal servant of Krishna, and thus evaporate Sarup Brahma, illusory misidentification of the self, which is the root of avidya. Right. So it says with the first stirrings, because the idea that I should serve Krishna in pure devotion is there. The newest devotee has that understanding. It's not necessarily that they're able to regularly practice it, because that's the one of the symptoms that's consistent. So it's not consistent, but that first stirrings is there. So therefore, they're able to appreciate that we're not the body. It doesn't mean the next moment they don't forget that, but the point is because of that contact with pure devotion, that they're able to appreciate that, right? Then it's just therefore, all three forms of distress, papa, papa bijam, and avidya, are dissipated. Hence, kleshagni is a characteristic of bhakti, right? Mm-hmm. The word shubha, right? So this is going through all those six symptoms of Shuddha Bhakti. Mm-hmm. The word shubha, good fortune and auspiciousness, means to ascend to a position of attracting the love and respect of everyone, to have available all varieties of pleasures and comforts that bring joy, and to be adorned with all good qualities. Okay? So that's auspiciousness or good fortune. Right? Ascend to a position of attracting the love and respect of everyone. Notice there, not that I have the respect and love. No, you have to attract it. So how are you going to attract that? Means you have facilities and you have good qualities. Right? Does that make sense? So the good qualities are more important, because then relationships will last. You'll be able to use those facilities properly. You'll be able to appreciate the association.
right? It means you will appreciate the respect and you'll offer respect. You use the facilities properly, right? But otherwise, if you just have one of these, then it doesn't necessarily work very good. So therefore, good fortune is all of these. When the heart is imbued with Shuddha Bhakti, the four qualities of humility, compassion, pridelessness, and magnanimous respect decorate the character of the jiva. As a result, the jiva is loved and respected by everyone in the world. Right? So these are the same qualities, trinada pisu niche na. Right? So if that's there, then it's appreciated. All the sadgunas, good qualities, automatically manifest in the personality of a devotee. Bhakti is competent to bestow upon the devotee all pleasures and comforts, even the material ones, plus the pleasure of impersonal Brahman realization, plus all the yoga siddhis, mystic perfections. The devotees, however, are not attracted to any of these, and so Shuddha Bhakti rewards a pure devotee with the rarest and paramount bliss, eternal unlimited ecstasy in the service of Bhagavan. Because material pleasure means you will use the facilities for yourself. Right, so the point is you have no facilities, then one laments, right? You have facilities, then one tries to enjoy them, right? That's the material mentality. But for the devotee, he doesn't have any facility, he thinks of Krishna, and he has facility, he uses it in Krishna's service. Right? So there is no, even though the facilities for material enjoyment is there, he's not taking it. Right? It doesn't mean that he doesn't use that. Means we'll take it, oh, when the material facility comes, he ignores it. No. Material facility means it's used for yourself. It's used for Krishna. It's just facility for devotional service. Does that make sense? Yeah, so because of that, then one gets that taste, that ecstasy in devotional service. Because one's engaging everything in devotional service. Does this make sense? So this is where, for the non-devotee, then when we say renunciation, it means you have nothing. Right? But for the devotee, renunciation means that the results of your work are for Krishna. Does that make sense? So this is where the mistake comes, that we sometimes take it one way or the other. It's devotion is the real point. Because otherwise, if it's by having nothing, then you'll be a better devotee, then that means karma gives rise to jnana. Karma gives rise to, karma does give rise to jnana, but the karma and jnana give rise to bhakti. Yeah. Even a touch of the ecstasy of Bhagavad Rati, spontaneous loving attachment for the Supreme Lord, makes the jiva disinterested in dharma, artha, kama, and even moksha. So a touch of this ecstasy means it is descending down into ruchi. Right? So when one comes to that platform, then it's seen that the desire for material things goes away. There isn't an interest in them. Right? Like that. So that's why even a touch of ecstasy, because ruchi, we'll say that this is the greatest thing around, but the thing is it's only a touch. Wait till you get to bhava. It gets better. Right? You know? Like that. That's the thing. One may perform various sadhanas to the best of one's ability for countless years, but one will never attain Shuddha Bhakti unless one's bhakti bhajan becomes free of discrepancy. The Supreme Lord satisfies most practitioners of spiritual discipline by offering them either bhukti or mukti. He does not give Shuddha Bhakti to a devotee unless the devotee is highly qualified. Right? In other words, you're doing the devotional service, then getting bhukti and mukti will be easy. Right? Yeah. He'll give that and then see what happens. Yeah. Right? So if you're happy with that, then you know, job's over, right? No, game's over, right? So but if one's not, one still is engaging just in pure devotion, then you get that pure bhakti. He does not give Shuddha Bhakti. Oh, okay. By cultivating impersonal Brahma Gyan, one is sure to achieve moksha. Similarly, by performing sacrifices, charitable acts, and pious deed, one certainly enjoys earthly and heavenly pleasures. These two allurements make Shuddha Bhakti difficult to obtain. Renouncing these allurements, One must become adept in the service of Krishna consciousness because no other method can bring success. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
Right? Means it's this. If we look at it, it's the same thing being expressed again and again from different angles. And one may say, no, you've heard this. We have heard this. But the problem is we're still not doing it. Right? Because we take it, facility means me. So what we're trying to do is change that. Facility means something to use for Krishna. So that's the whole point. So from all these different angles, we're trying to bring out that facility is to be used for Krishna, not for ourselves. And if we have that understanding, then all it means getting facility is not the problem. Because it's not that 1/10,000th, the tip of the hair, you know, just got a new couch. You know, it's 10 to the, you know, probably 9, 10, you know, power times bigger than you. There's no question you got the couch. Right? Means your desire is there and the modes of nature arrange the couch. Right? Does that make sense? So, but the point is the facility, it's we want to use the facility for our own enjoyment. That's the disease. So that's why again and again and again this comes up. But from different angles describing different things. So when you're only interested in pleasing Krishna, then he blesses one with pure devotion. Mm-hmm. That, we said something wrong there? No, okay.
That's
not
it. That's it. He just got a new couch.
Yeah.
How did he know I got a new couch?
Okay, renouncing these allurements means they're engaged in Krishna's service. So from the transcendental platform, we'll use all facilities in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? Because the transcendental platform, that's moksha. But the point is moksha is only useful if you're doing some service to Krishna. And facilities are only useful if you use them for Krishna. Right? So when karma and jnana is used in Krishna's service, then it's fine. Then one gets shuddha bhakti. Right? Bhakti is the fountainhead of transcendental ecstasy. Hence, it is an unlimited ocean of ananda. Neither the sensual material pleasures nor the ananda of impersonal Brahman, or Brahman realization, multiplied a million times are equal to a mere drop of ecstasy from the unlimited ocean of bhakti. Right? Because see, the problem comes here is one may say, okay, I accept that the a million times you multiply the material pleasures, you know, that doesn't get there because that only equals a drop compared to the ocean of mukti. But why is it the mukti that multiplied, you know, a million times doesn't get kind of close? Because the point is mukti is, it says an ocean. Oceans have limits. But bhakti, that's unlimited, shoreless ocean. So you can't compare something that has a size to and it's something unlimited. So even if you multiply it millions of times, it's still not going to get close to unlimited. So it's in a different category. It's something we're just not used to. Everybody's looking for it, but we're not used to it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? That feeling that this is going great, the relationship, and wow, you know, this could last forever, it feels ever. That's just the Brahman platform. It's not that you're on the Brahman, but that's just that unlimited. But that's all the far. But that, even that, that is that multiplied millions of times doesn't get anywhere close to bhakti. You understand? And that's as good as it gets in the material world. When one has that feeling of wow, you know, this could go on. That's as good as it gets. It doesn't get better than that. So that's the limit. And that's with material desire. So you remove the material desire and the pain from that, that's what you're left with. That's moksha. Right? So it's not like there's a whole lot of difference there. You understand? So what we're being offered is give that up, that desire that's going to make me happy, and go for the unlimited ocean of bhakti, which comes from simply doing something to please Krishna. Because he's the whole. Because the whole point is that relationship, you say, oh, this is eternal. All you're doing is touching the Brahman aspect of it. So you're touching Krishna. It's not the activities, it's not the situation, it's not the people involved and this and that. It's Krishna as Brahman, as that activity, as that taste, or as that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. This is one of those very quiet moments. Everybody thinks about, wow, that is it. I'm going to have to rethink this. My material existence, I'm going to have to look at this again.
Put the couch on eBay.
Put the couch on eBay. Yeah. No, use it in Krishna's service. Yeah. No, you sit on it and watch Krishna conscious videos. Yeah, come on. Yeah, offer your popcorn. Hey, come on.
Prema.
Neither the sensual material pleasures nor the ananda of impersonal Brahman realization multiplied a million times are equal to a mere drop of ecstasy from the unlimited ocean of bhakti. So it's not even equal to a mere drop. So it just doesn't compare. There are different categories. It just doesn't, you know, it's not going to work. You know, the 3-year-old on his tricycle and the, you know, Formula One. It's not going to compare. You know what I'm saying? And that's just how, you know, you can't get unlimited in material examples. So that's the, you know, or a candle in the sun. That would be even bigger, okay? That's what they say. Gross material pleasure is dismally insignificant. And the bliss of Brahman that one attains by achieving mukti after negating such material pleasure is dry and insipid. Both of these so-called joys are diametrically opposed to the transcendental divine bliss of Shuddha Bhakti. Such antipodes should not be compared. Antipodes. Wow. What's an antipode?
Like a pode.
Huh?
But, like a normal pode, but against it.
A normal pode. So what's a pode?
We're asking us.
I'm asking him, huh?
A position.
A pode.
Antipodes is like on the surface of the earth, the point diametrically opposed to the antipodes.
Yeah.
How do you say it?
Antipodes.
Where was that? Antipodes. Okay. And so this is how do you say the one on this side? That's the antipodes. So what's the one on this side?
I've never heard
Pidi.
Of
it. The pedi and the antipode.
Same root as like podium.
Podium, yeah. So okay, so position. So it means you have two ends of the, so you have the podium, but then you have the pode and the antipode. Okay. Yeah, I guess without the two, it wouldn't be a podium, right? It would just be a kind of flat. It would be like a plate or something, right? You ever think of that? Your plate is actually just a podium without the antipode.
You should right? get podium plates.
Yeah. I think that's called a bucket. Okay, so basic point is antipodes means they're completely opposite, opposed to each other. Okay. The bliss of Shuddha Bhakti is so intense and overempowering that any other types of happiness, including that of Brahman realization, seem empty and insignificant, as if a little puddle were to be compared to a vast bottomless ocean. The pure devotee relishing such ecstasy knows his joys. Others can only speculate. The devotee's heart is infused with Shuddha Bhakti. Okay, that's the next one. So in other words, if you have an interest in any of these others, then that Shuddha Bhakti doesn't manifest. Right? To that degree, one isn't interested, to that degree it's manifest. But the point is if you want something else, why would there be bhakti? Because the point is the relationship with Krishna, that's exclusive. Yes?
What would be that unless bhakti is there, you would still be interested? You need something.
Yes, but the point is you've associated devotees, you've come in touch with that bhakti, so that something is there, but then you have to take an interest in it. Even if bhakti is there, you still have to take an interest.
So you have to decide.
Yes, you have to decide. Because the point is that Krishna and this, or is this just Krishna? When it's just Krishna, then that intensifies, right? If you're trying to do 10 things at once, how intense can any one experience be, right? But when you cut it all down and there's only one endeavor, then the experience is greater. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. Yeah. You know, it's just like the mother's with the child, and so somehow or another, there's nothing distracting, so it's just the interaction between the mother and child, right? Now let's say the mother is holding the child's hand and you're trying to get on a moving bus. Okay, so it means it's not that the child relationship's not there and considered, but it's not, you know, so prominent. So the depth of the taste of it is not very great. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that if you're trying to, you know, be absorbed in Krishna and in Maya, it won't really work out like that. Because for us, Maya is greater. Right? Where it means otherwise, if we were, why would you deal with the insignificant element of Maya unless we thought it was special? Because once we understand it's not, you know, it's like, let's say, you go up to the, you know, a food counter and you say, oh, what do you got? Oh, we got this very nice, you know, very special preparation like that they put on the counter. And then they pull out a bowl. Or we have this very nice mud here. You know what I'm saying? So is it a decision? No. But for a little kid, it might be a decision. Well, it looks like pretty good mud there. You know? Can I have them both? You know? Right? Does that make sense? The devotee whose heart is infused with Shuddha Bhakti attracts the attention of Krishna, along with that of all his close associates by the power of his love. Love is the only way to conquer Sri Krishna. No other means are viable. Right? Because he is everything, so it's not a matter of you conquering it. Anything that you do, it's his potency that you're allowed to do it anyway. The facility that you're working with, that's him. The rules on which those things can be combined and get that is his. That combining them, getting the result is still him. Mm-hmm. So therefore, what is there that's not already going on? So it's the affection that's unique. So that's what attracts Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right. Vrajanath, is there a path of bhakti that runs between sadhana bhakti and prema bhakti? Raghunath Das Bhavati, because now he's mentioned sadhana bhakti and prema bhakti, because he's only divided like that. So now he says, is there anything in between? Because generally if you have something, there's always a sandhi, there's always a junction. Raghunath Das Bhavati, yes, there is bhava bhakti, which means that there are three stages of bhakti: sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti, right? But because in this, when you're comparing to prema bhakti, that's actual bhakti. Everything else is preliminary. So that way then you can count sadhana and bhava as sadhana. But it's still the sadhana bhakti and bhav sadhana bhakti. So they're two separate entities. So generally we don't mention sadhana, so we're not used to it there. That's why when it says sadhana, we'll leave out what's in between. Mm-hmm. But it's in other words, what gets you to prema is sadhana, like practice.
Mm-hmm. Right. Raganuga is bhava?
Raganuga, it means the full manifestation of it is in bhava, but it can start from when pure devotion starts at the Madhyama platform. Like that. Means when we say Raganuga, we means it's consistently there. Means what I'm saying, the new devotee and prashad, there is spontaneous devotional service happening there. But as soon as the meal's over, you know, then that spontaneity is over. Also, except it means if you count taking a nap as devotional service, then there's also more spontaneity.
Paying a long dandavat.
Huh?
Paying a long dandavat.
Paying a long dandavat, yes. Now here it is counted as a dandavat. Vrajanath, what are the specific symptoms of sadhana bhakti? Raghunath Das Babaji. In fact, bhakti is one. Prema bhakti, which is saturated with the pure consciousness of loving devotional service to Sri Krishna, is the ultimate goal. However, as long as the conditioned jiva executes bhakti under the influence of the material mind and senses, his endeavor is known as sadhana bhakti. Vrajana. Yet you have not said that prema bhakti is eternally perfect mood, inherent in the spirit soul. Why then does the jiva need to perform sadhana in order to perfect it? Right? He hasn't said that prema is inherent in the soul. Right? Does that make sense? But its nature is there. It's the natural tendency.
How do you have a natural tendency for something that's not a part of you?
Means ananda is there, but the point is this prema is a commitment. So the neutral stage is not a commitment. Right? So we've already pointed out, because ananda is there, so that's the natural maturity of ananda. Because the ananda of the material world isn't really ananda. Right? It's ignorance. So it looks like ananda, but it's not. So the whole material world is not what it looks like. That's why it's called maya. Right? Bhava then means it's the ananda of the liberation. But that ananda is limited because it's only what you're experiencing in existing on the spiritual platform. But ananda interacting with devotees based on that affection, that now is the real ananda. So that's the nature. Raghunath Das Babaji, this nitya siddha bhava resides within the heart and is not to be gained from elsewhere. It is not a sadhya, external to the very nature of the jiva. Sadhana is the name given to the method of evoking this nitya siddha bhava from within the heart. Because you have to evoke it. Prema bhakti does not appear in the heart of the jiva as long as he is in the conditioned state. Thus, the nitya siddha bhava is temporarily in a covered position from where it needs to be evoked. In truth, prema bhakti is nitya siddha, eternally perfect and present within the heart. Right? So it's there, but it has to be evoked. Right? So we're not. So that's the point. This is the point of confusion, is that we're taking the jiva and the spiritual platform automatically is on the platform of prema. Right? Because if we say one falls from the spiritual platform, then we're going to say he falls from prema. Right? And then it's said one never falls from prema. One never falls from Goloka. But we'll take it as Goloka, we're in prema. But the point is that prema has to be uncovered. It's there in the heart, but it has to be evoked. Does that make sense? So that's evoked by the association of the devotees. Right? How is the idea of it evoked here? In the conditioned state, association of devotees. Right? So that means then bringing it to its maturity is also going to happen in the association of devotees. And then once it's there, then it's going to be tasted in the association of devotees. That's why devotees is so important. Yes.
It means that prema could be evoked in each of the jiva.
Yes.
Those who are destined to go to Vaikuntha, they should also have prema?
Yeah, no, because prema is there. They function on the platform of prema. It just doesn't go beyond prema. It means in the 10 stages of prema, bhava and prema, they get up to prema. They don't go beyond into this man and all these other things like that. That's, they don't do.
So it's not only towards Krishna.
Prema means towards Vishnu Tattva. You know, in the position of Bhagavan. Right? Does that make sense? That's there. That's why I say Paramatma is not, because point is he's a person. Right? If you're looking Paramatma, meaning, okay, Krishna's taking the position of Paramatma, it's Krishna who's taking the position of Paramatma. But we're just seeing Paramatma, he's just the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. So it's just a matter of he takes care of things. So you do good work, you get good results. Is that? So in truth, prema bhakti is nitya siddha, eternally perfect and present within the heart. Rajanath, what are the characteristics of sadhana? Right. So in other words, he's not saying that it's an intrinsic quality because he's not manifesting it until he gets there. But the point is it's how you say, what does he say? It's present within the heart. It's a matter of bringing it out. In the conditioned state, it has to be uncovered. But on the liberated state, it has to be cultivated. Right? Because the nature of the jiva is going to be that the relationship with the Supreme Lord, he understands that he is part and parcel of the Lord, and naturally the Lord being his source, his happiness is going to come from that connection. That all the liberated souls in knowledge understand. Right? Those who only have partial knowledge, only those interested in liberation, they don't understand this. Right? Right, that's in the Tattva Vivek. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you understand? That's the natural. All living entities in the spiritual world have this understanding. Now it's how they're going to interact with the Lord. That makes a difference between the realm. Whether it's through rules and regulations or not, you know, through awe and reverence or not, you know, or any kind of combination of that. Does that make sense? Rajanath, what are the characteristics of sadhana? Raghunath Das Babaji, the hallmark of sadhana bhakti is to repose the mind upon Sri Krishna by every conceivable means. Rajanath means whatever can be done to serve Krishna, that's done. Whatever, because you have unlimited facility, so then whatever, however much of that you can engage in Krishna's service is what you do. So that's sadhana. Rajana, how many types of sadhana bhakti are there? Raghunath Das Babaji, there are two types, Vaidhi bhakti and Raghunuga bhakti. Rajana, kindly elaborate upon Vaidhi bhakti. Raghunath Das Babaji, the intrinsic propensity of the jiva for prema bhakti is cultivated in two ways. One method of development is through Vaidhi, discipline, and is thus known as Vaidhi bhakti. By vidhi is meant adherence to the rules and regulations of shastra. Hence, vidhi and shastra are synonymous, as the shastra contains all the rules and regulations of the vidhi. Thus, when bhakti is inspired by shastric stipulations, it is called vaidhi bhakti. Right? That makes sense. We're doing because it's supposed to. You go to Mangalarti, why? You know, it's the best time of the morning for spiritual realization. By going there, you're purified of millions of lives of sins by seeing the deity, by clapping your hand. So that's all shastric based. Correct and good. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's what makes it vaidhi. You're doing because you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Shastras are mentioned. So you're following shastra. Like that? That means vaidhi. Vrajanath, from your instructions I have gathered that all shastras advise humanity to abide by Vaidhi Dharma. However, the problem of the jiva, particularly in Kali Yuga, because of his diminished longevity, is that he does not even have the time to browse through the shastric mountains of Vidhi and Nisheda. Is there a shastric maxim that succinctly summarizes the essential Vidhis and Nishedas? Vidhis is what to do, Nisheda is what not to do. So in other words, this life is short, so he doesn't have time to go through the shastra. Right? You know, you're busy, you know, like, you know, doing something important, like jumping off a bridge connected to a rubber band or something, you know, like that. So, you know, I mean, you might get a few moments on the way down, but you know, you need a small book, you know, like that. So now he says, is there a shastra maxim that gives the essence? Right? So in other words, how you say? Mahavakya, right?
Philosophy Digest.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Raghunath Das Babaji. The Padma Purana Uttarakhanda 42.130 and the Narada Pancharatra 42.23 both advise to always remember the Supreme Lord Sri Vishnu is the Vidhi. Observance and to never forget him is the Nisheda, prohibition. All other Vidhi and Nisheda mentioned in the scriptures must be considered as subordinate instructions to these two, right? So that very nicely sums it up. So always remember Krishna, never forget him. That's what one's trying to do. Everything else is simply in support of that. all the rules and regulations are something to help you remember, or they're to not forget. Four regular principles is so that you don't forget. Chanting your 16 rounds is so you remember. Right? Does that make sense?
So generally, Bhagavat and Pancharatra is remember, and Vedic is not forget.
No. Vedic is also means all of it is don't. It means your Bhagavat, the tendency is to always remember, not forget. The Pancharatra is so that you have the maximum amount of focus on what makes you remember, and then those things that keep you from forgetting. Vedic, it includes all the how to engage all the things that make you forget in remembering the Lord. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why the Vedic, when devotees are interested in something other than the Bhagavata, the Pancharatra, in other words, other than chanting the holy name and deity worship and preaching, you know, studying Bhagavatam in the association of devotees, if there's something other than these main aspects, then the only thing that takes care of that in a very nice scientific way is the Veda.
Mm.
So then if we're going to drop from Bhagavat Pancharatra into avidya, you know, into Malecha culture, that's quite a gap. That's why the Vedic culture is there, so you don't have to drop down into ignorance to try to engage the ignorance in Krishna's service. The Vedas already show how to do it. You have to take that ignorance of the concept I'm going to enjoy in the material world and establish your platform of dealing with it in goodness. Right? So that regulates it. So you regulate it, you have proper knowledge, it's performed at the proper time, proper place, circumstance, proper attitude with the proper detachment, right? But the point is to do that for the Lord. Right? But the problem is we want to not have any of those restrictions, no mode of goodness, no detachment, total attachment, total, you know, just how you say, whimsicalness, but it will be devotional service. That's the problem. So that's why the Vedic regulates it, because then there's more of a chance it will be engaged in Krishna service. That's all. Does that make sense? Like that. So you, in other words, you purify it, and then there's no interest, because the pop is gone. Right? And you haven't created any new seeds. Right? Old seeds will be there, but new ones aren't created. If you use the Malecha system, by getting involved in it, then you're engaged in it, so you're cultivating sin, and at the same time, you're creating more sinful seeds. So when you get tired of that and go, this is crazy, and then take up devotional service, then you have all this sin and sinful seeds to deal with.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense? And you've been absorbing yourself in avidya in the meantime. Right? So all three are there. But now devotional service is powerful enough to get rid of it, but then you really have to commit yourself to devotional service. Now you can't half commit yourself and half not. Otherwise, it'll be slow. You know, so that's the thing, is you've gone from one extreme. Now if you want to get the effect, you have to go to the other extreme. Total absorption in Maya, total absorption in Krishna. Does that make sense? Then that's the only advantage to the pendulum swing of the mlechas and yavanas, absorption in the material nature. It's like you put so much ghee, the fire goes out. Right? Now you better take advantage of that and become advanced, before the fire finally sputters together and comes up again. You know, so. Does that make sense? It is a method. That's how it works for us. But we have to take advantage of the Vaidhi. You know, what is the rules? Because that regulates it and makes it work very smoothly. The esoteric purport is that remembering the Supreme Lord is the fountainhead of all Vidhi. The elaborate and intricate Varnashram system, a socio-religious society strongly recommended in the scriptures, is subservient to this principle of Vaidhi. Right? I mean, Vidhi. It means you want to always remember Krishna. That's the whole point of the Vedic literature. It's not that Varnashram takes precedence. Sometimes when we discuss Varnashram, it becomes as prominent or more prominent than Bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? Similarly, forgetfulness of Sri Vishnu is the principal nisheda. Instructions against committing sin, restraining the outward projection of consciousness, and the performance of appropriate penances to counteract sinful reaction are corollaries to the main vidhi and nisheda. Right? So, the four-legged principle is to keep one from committing sin, because that makes you forget Krishna. Right? Sound like sense? Like that. Pulling in the senses, that you're not just looking for sense gratification. The pulling in the senses means when the senses work, they're only looking for opportunities to serve Krishna. That's the actual pratyahara. The senses have been pulled in. Right? It means for the yogi, it's just pulled in, they aren't functioning. So that's very difficult. You know? So here it means that they're pulled in, meaning that they're pulled in that you're not using them for yourself. Right? Right. And penances means whatever should be done to avoid these things. Whatever you've been involved in, so you don't do that. Right? Okay. Our corollaries to the main vidya and nisheda, which is remembrance and non-forgetfulness of Sri Vishnu. Hence, it is to be understood that amongst all the vidhis, including those governing the Varnashram social system, remembrance of the Supreme Lord is the eternal vidhi. So, remembrance of the Lord is the essence of Bhagavat, of Pancharatrik, and Vedic vidhis. But now, if you go outside of Vedic, then it's not the essential point. Right? Non-Vedic, the essential point is not to always remember Krishna. Right? So that's the weakness. That's why we don't prefer. Right? We say yukta vairagya, but remember, what are we yuktaing? Right? We're yuktaing facility. We're not yuktaing mentality. You know what I'm saying? The malecha mentality is not something that you engage in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? That's all. It's whatever facilities you have that you use. It's not a mentality. It's not a lifestyle. Right? Does that make sense? Means you go to a very wealthy person's house, right? And they live in a certain way by lifestyle, not by facilities, by lifestyle. If you go to those little plastic, tarpaulins with the, you know, old tires on the roof, underneath Howrah Bridge, they're living the same lifestyle, right? They sit down, they eat, you know, how they cook, you know, they get out there, but they're poor, so there's nothing. They're out there grinding spices, making it nice. They hardly have anything, but they're living the same kind of lifestyle. They just don't have the opulence. That's the same. That's the difference. That's a yuktivari. Whatever you have, use that in Krishna's service. The lifestyle doesn't change. But when we change the lifestyle, that's not really yuktivairagya. Right? Does that make sense? That's just devotional service overwhelmed by our material desire, basically. Though it may be some connection, but it's not yuktivairagya in its ideal form. You know what I'm saying? That's the difference. Yes.
Yesterday, Janan Das Prabhu was telling us a few passages of Prabhupada, and he was telling that when he came here, and there was just the parliament of you, Prabhupada came, and he didn't change his routine. There was no electricity. He wake up the same time, and the facility to engage was a kerosene lamp.
Right.
And instead of the dictaphone, there's no electricity, he used a typewriter. But he didn't change anything in his facility.
That's a very nice example. Yeah, so that's the point. That's the yukta vairagya. He's changed the thing. But to change the lifestyle, then that's not yukta vairagya. That's just attachment. So that's why you have to be very careful. Because yukta vairagya means then the result is given up. And it's for Krishna. So then one has to explain how it's for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Especially, because generally, when does the argument over yukta vairagya come up? When there's no other alternative? Or when there is an alternative? And one wants to do it in a traditional way, and one doesn't want to do it in a traditional way. That's when the argument of yukta vairagya comes up. Not when there is no facility for anything else. Does that make sense?
In that verse in the NOD, it says prapanchikataya buddhya, which means that you have to engage the five mahabhutas. That's what the pancha comes from in that
okay.
verse. So
okay.
It's earth, air, fire, ether, water.
So that's the yukta vairagya.
Yeah,
the earth, water, air, ether.
Those materials, those elements.
Okay, nice. That's nice. Right. Yeah, so just as there's not an attachment to the modern, there also shouldn't be attachment to the traditional. Right? The point is the traditional is there because that's how Krishna would live. That's why it's preferred. That's how the sages lived. That's how they found was the nicest, most comfortable way of performing devotional service. That's what tradition is for. Right? But it's not that we're attached to the traditional. Right? Because the point is the manifestation of traditional here is also within, made out of the, you know, Pancha Mahabhutas. So we want to be able to engage whatever it is in Krishna's service. Like that. So favorable to Krishna, so if there is something that's more traditional, we'll use it. But if there's not, we'll use whatever is there. Because the point is that tradition is used because that gives a particular result or particular effect. So if we can use something else and get as close as we can to that effect, then we use it if a traditional method's not available. Right? Does that make sense? Because even just on a side thing, even in the modern, so much of the time as time goes, they figure out that the traditional things are better. You know what I'm saying? Previously, you know, you had, you know, one family that lived a little bit upstream, and they had a funny kind of house that had this monster wheel connected to it that the stream ran by. And, you know, if stones are in there and they're moving around and they're grinding the wheat and this and that and all the stuff, and that's all that was there. Right? You know, and they're living out there, and, you know, you have your animals, and, you know, there's lots of, you know, dung from the animals, and that goes out in the field, and you grow stuff. So everything's natural, everything's organic, everything's stone ground. Right? Like that. But then that's considered stupid and, you know, old-fashioned, so you have to be modern and move into the city and this and that and blah. But then after a while, then everybody's, you know, absorbed in the ecstasy of that, you know, that mode of passion and everything. But after a while, they notice that, you know, health, this, that's not so good. Why not? Because they're not eating organic, natural, stone ground, you know, food, right? So now it's all that. Now you package it nice, you make a big thing out of it, it has to be stone ground and this and that. But still, the person who's talking stone ground doesn't want to go out and live in that house with those animals. Like that. No, you want to be able to walk into your supermarket and a really nice thing, but it's not too synthetically flash, you know, like that. It should be, you know, kind of nice, kind of organically flash, like that. Does that make sense? But you're not going to be happy if it's wrapped up in a brown piece of paper. You know, it still has to be one of those nitrogen-filled little bags, right? You know what I'm saying? Yeah? You know, like that. So, in other words, it's only because something, but they find that it goes back. It has to go back. You have to go back to these old things. And why are they old?
Because they work.
They worked. Right? You know, you go back to the time of the Greeks, and there was a guy living there with the thing and this stone, you know, thing. You know, time of the Romans, same. Medieval times, same. You know, Renaissance, same. You know, it goes into the Age of Enlightenment, same. You know, it's all that. And just recently, then, that stopped. So it worked. That's all. Of course, now there is no stream, so that makes it a bit difficult. But you must appreciate that the water has been diverted to, you know, go to farms that are doing organic farming, yes. Right? Like that. Okay, Rajana. It appears that persons following the Varnashram system have to follow two religious duties: to adhere to the rules and regulations of Varnashram Dharma and to practice Shuddha Bhakti. Whereas on the other hand, those jivas who do not follow the Varnashram Dharma, being outside that system, need only practice the duties of Shuddha Bhakti.
Hey.
Okay. Yeah.
He says need, but maybe it could also be calm.
Need only practice. Yeah, means it appears so. This arrangement appears odd because the followers of the Varnashram system have to execute karmakanda activities as well as the bhakti kanda activities, making life seemingly more difficult for them. What is the proper understanding of all this? Raghunath Das Babaji. Those who have attained eligibility for practicing bhakti and are yet within the Varnashram system need only execute the bhakti kanda activities, because bhakti automatically includes the karma yoga activities of Varnashram Dharma, right? Because that's the points being made, is that the activities, the favorable activities of karma that are useful in bhakti were originally activities of bhakti. Mm-hmm. They've just been reflected in the material world, and people are following them without bhakti, right? And because they're not complete then, because they're complete in bhakti, but then you add in all kinds of other things just to make it complete in itself. You know what I'm saying? Just like when we have all these philosophies. There's a few parts from them that are there as part of Vedanta. But they're only taking that part of Vedanta, and since it's not complete, they have to fill it out with all kinds of other strange and wonderful things. Right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, bhakti already includes the activities, the pious activities of karma that are recommended. It already includes the pious activities of jnana that are recommended. Right? And of yoga that are recommended. So it already includes everything. It's complete in itself. In those cases where the karmakanda activities are contrary to the bhakti-kanda activities, the karmakanda activities are to be rejected without fear of any adverse repercussion. Because they're only fill-in because you don't have bhakti. Right? In other words, if there's devotion, you don't mind something simple. But if there's no devotion, it better be a knockout. Otherwise, where's the experience? You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing.
Just organically grown packaging.
Meaning?
That if you don't have bhakti.
Yeah, package it nicely. Yeah. Otherwise, just go down to the farm, take your own, you know, canvas bag and pick up whatever you like, you know. Generally, the practitioner of bhakti naturally has no desire to perpetrate vikarma, immoral sinful activities, or akarma, the disregard of his material activities, right? Because he just wants to please Krishna. And so the scriptures give, you know, services and activities to do. He does them nicely. So he's not interested in sinful activities. He's not interested in not doing his duties. Right? So therefore, what's left is just those activities that are favorable to devotion. If by caprice of fate... Caprice?
Whim.
Oh. If by caprice of fate... I just heard Big Ben. If by caprice of fate he executes prohibited activities, he is not required to perform penances to exonerate his misdemeanors. Once bhakti is established within the heart, sudden or accidental sinful activities cannot take root there. They are automatically and easily destroyed. Right? It's not that he plans like that, but it happens. So, because it happens, the point is if you're performing the activities of karma, right, they have all these extraneous things to make its completeness or consistency. So then you do something wrong in that, then there has to be something to correct it within that. But the point is it's not part of bhakti karma, right, the activities of devotional service. So then if you're doing something wrong, all you have to do is not do it. Right? Because it's not the karma can't correct and create bhakti. So it's just a matter of giving it up and performing the devotional activities. This idea, no, there must be a prayaschitta, a penance, that's a mundane concept. The only prayaschitta is engaging in devotional service and giving up that sinful activity. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
There isn't something else. To think that there's something else, that's mental speculation. That's just illusion. Because it can't, because then we're saying bhakti then is generated from karma. Someone's done something materially, morally wrong. They have to do something, some penance within this system of morality. That will then make them fit for bhakti. That's against the philosophy.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of they don't have to. They just have to stop doing that, take up good association, and start engaging in devotional activities. That's all. It's nothing else. You understand? Because all it is, you're supposed to be doing this, but if you go do something else, it's not that you need to do something else there to improve this. No, you just have to come back to this. Right? Does that make sense? Kids are playing a game. Right? And one of the kids gets distracted and goes over and is playing with a stick in the mud over there. So now, does he have to do something there, like stand on his head in the mud? Then he'll be qualified to be in the game? No, he just has to stop playing what he's doing and go back to the game. Because the only way you're going to cultivate the game is by playing that game. Yes.
So we should not perform sinful activities on the strength of the holy name?
Yes, of course.
So could that be a fear that my oath, you must perform some penance so we know
no,
that
No, but the thing is it doesn't matter. All it's doing is giving mundane satisfaction to the people who think that there should be a penance. That's all. It's only pleasing their mundanity. You know what I'm saying? You know, like burning witches or, you know, stuff like that. You know, it means these are only giving satisfaction to the mundane consciousness of people. It doesn't actually do anything. You know what I'm saying? It didn't improve Christianity. You know?
Like Guantanamo Bay.
That's another thing.
Okay.
Underlying this conception, is there a doubt about the ability of devotional service to completely purify?
Yes, because we think we have to make up our own prayaschitta. Because even if you want to perform prayaschitta, okay, but the Vedas have already given. You've done this wrong. It's wrong on the pious platform. And so this is the penance, but we don't use those. So why would we use something else? It's just speculative. It's just verbal cognition that we think this is going to work, because it never works. I've never seen devotees satisfied with someone's penance. When it's over, then it's like, well, the penance was just there to keep them busy until we can think of something else. Because as soon as it's over, then they want more. So that means it's material, because there's no satisfaction. Otherwise, they'd be sad. If it actually was devotional, they'd be satisfied. But they're not satisfied. So it's purely mundane. You know what I'm saying? So the penance is be absorbed properly in devotional service, always remembering Krishna and never forgetting. So those activities that make one forget, give those up. Right? And those activities that make one remember, then take advantage of that. Yes?
It's kind of like when the Pandavas were banished to the forest, even when they came back, it didn't make a difference. It was still...
Yeah, because they don't. All it was a trick to get rid of them for a while. Mm. So prayaschitta is only a trick to get rid of people, that's all. And then when the time's up, because time marches on, then we're dissatisfied that the time's over. Now you've got to revisit, you know, like that. And that's all. And it's just mundane. But because we've been doing it from time immemorial, we don't notice that it's mundane. We just think it's a normal part of, you know, administration. Mm. Or, you know, social structure, or, you know, like that. You know, people aren't satisfied. Why don't you preach to them? They're not satisfied because of their mundanity. They're not satisfied because they're not looking at the devotional element. Mm-hmm. So they're only going to be satisfied by devotion. No one's going to be satisfied by penance. Mm-hmm. Right? If it's not connected to Krishna. So how it's going to work. But, you know. That's the thing. Because then making them satisfied means I have to work. And it's so much easier just to, you know, look at the option of penance. Like that. It's just so much easier. Because it's just a few people in a room and a piece of paper and Hari Bol. You know, the other one means you actually have to go out of the room and actually have to preach to people for years to get them to give up their mundane consciousness. Right? That's the seeming illusion of the benefit of bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. You know, it appears that it will do so many things, but it never does. Okay, therefore devotees are not required to perform the prayaschitta penances of karmakanda. Right? Mm-hmm. One should simply surrender to the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, who will absolve the surrendered soul from all sinful reactions. Right? Surrendered soul, not just, you know, taking advantage of the process. The essence of the Bhagavad Gita is that a person who has become worthy of executing Shuddha Bhakti need no longer conform to the rules and regulations of Jnana Shastra and Karma Shastra. He attains complete perfection simply by adhering to the path of Shuddha Bhakti. Therefore, the proclamation of Sri Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 9:31 must be recognized as paramount. My devotees are never destroyed. The devotee should hold this promise if Sri Krishna is infallible. Raghunath Das Babaji fell into silent contemplation. At this point of the conversation, quietly speaking with each other, Vrajanath and Vijay came to the firm conviction that jnana and karma were very insignificant. All doubts regarding bhakti were cleared in their minds. They understood that the only true benediction for humanity was the mercy of Bhakti Devi, the goddess of Shuddha Bhakti. There was no other alternative. Okay? So we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Janitai Gaurapremanandi
Jai Bhagavan.